Welcome into this Wednesday edition of ESPN FC on ESPN Plus. I'm Sebastian Salazar. I will be joined momentarily by Craig Burley, Shaka Hislop, Julian Laurent. Ian Dark will join us as well. He was calling Bundesliga games from his house this past weekend. We'll get the heads up on that experience. Plus, we'll hear from Taylor Twellman and Julie Foudy as well, as both Major League Soccer and the National Women's Soccer League look to restart play. But we begin with a strange story of Serge Aurier. He posted this picture to his personal Instagram on Tuesday night, getting a haircut from a hairstylist. This would go against government guidelines for social distancing. It's not the first time that the Spurs right back has been on the wrong side of these government guidelines, and it comes 24 hours before Spurs were scheduled to return to training. The club has announced that it will open an investigation into Aurier's behavior. Craig, Shaka, Jules, let's dive in on this story, as odd as it may be. Jules, we'll start with you. I've seen the reaction to Serge Aurier on social media. It has been overwhelmingly negative. I wonder, what's the reaction been in the English football community?
Well, I think if we start with his club, his teammates, I think there probably would be a few of them who once again we feel disappointed by his attitude, by his behavior. This is not the first time, it's the third time in the last 2 months that he has broken the rules of lockdown. Twice before he was running without respecting social distancing. This is even different because he brought his hairdresser, his barber, to his house to get a haircut. He doesn't think to seem that is that big deal, Serge. Is that he believes that he's been blown out of proportion completely and that he just wanted a haircut, that he is negative, the barber is negative. I don't know if the barber was really tested, but anyway. And it was very quick, and then the guy went home. There's a lot of issues with this. Obviously, one is breaking the rules, but two, when did that happen? Because if that happened after Aurier was tested on Sunday or Monday, and between those tests and when he went back to training yesterday, for example, then it's even more serious, if you want, because in between his test and going back to training to see all the people at the club and etc., even with respecting social distancing, he might have had the virus or something like that through the barber. So there's a lot of issues there, and a lot of people at the club are not happy.
Craig, what do you make of this story? Obviously, as Jules mentioned, it's not the first time that Aurier has had trouble with this issue.
No, and I think generally dressing rooms will tend to, for the most, probably get on with it. I mean, I'm sure there are a few people not best pleased. However, the stupidity of it, as Jill said, not being the first time, is enough to make a few people very angry. Look, I've never really been in the camp of the footballers have to be role models in general. But I think when we're talking about, you know, people dying here, and there have been people dying by the thousands, particularly in the UK, then I think anybody in the public eye has to be seen to be setting an example, because we've already seen some of the idiotic behaviour from members of the public in terms of not regarding the social distancing. And I think it is incumbent on high-profile people, and particularly players and sports that fans look up to make sure you're adhering to the government guidelines. Because if some of the big names are not doing it, then you can see why some of the public, are quite happy to follow suit. And that spells danger for trying to get the pandemic, get the curve flattened and get it going down. And it's just idiotic behaviour that, you know, can encourage other people, particularly young people, to go out and just get on with their normal daily life.
Shaka, put yourself in that Spurs dressing room. What do you say to a teammate like this?
I think it's desperately selfish by Serge Aurier. And as much as footballers aren't necessarily role models, at the same time, you have to understand that in the close environments that our sport is played, and the fact that in different Premier League clubs, maybe not Spurs, players have tested positive. You have to recognise that unless you're willing to continue to test yourself every day for the next 2 weeks, any kind of outside interaction such as this, even with your barber, who you are telling us is also testing negative, can potentially push any opening of the season back a couple of weeks' time. And at a point where a lot of people are saying that players should not be paid while the leagues are dormant as they are, and players are claiming different. This kind of act, as selfish as it may be, I think has a wider knock-on effect, not just for Spurs, but for the league in general.
Do you know, Sebi, the stupidity of stupidity of this is, and it is only a... And it does seem like something stupid, But, you know, here we have the Premier League desperate to try and finish the season, right? For all the reasons we've spoken about over the last couple of months, you know, trying not to relegate teams without playing games, teams getting promoted, the lawsuits that may follow, all the things that go with it. We're talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars here in revenue to go to clubs. And here we could have, and I'm, you know, maybe I'm being a bit over the top here, but if one player or two players are stepping out of line, and that makes the virus spread rapidly amongst teammates, the season will just be cancelled. The season will be cancelled. So one wrong move, one bit of stupidity from some of these players could see the Premier League's plans in the next couple of weeks just crumble, because we know how fast this thing spreads. So players really need to adhere, if they want to finish this season, and I'm sure everybody does, they've got to make sure they're adhering to what the doctors and what the guidelines are, so that the Premier League can try and finish the season and put it to bed.
Jules, we won't know the punishment for RA just yet, but let's transition this discussion to what would happen if this were in the Bundesliga. What would the punishment be in the Bundesliga for a player, and how close do you think that that'll be to what actually happens to Premier League players should they break these curfews once we get back to action?
So I think if there was a protocol in place and the Premier League had resumed, like it is in the Bundesliga in Germany, then Sergio Yev will have to self-isolate for a week or two, depending on the cases. So in this case, I would think maybe 2 weeks of self-isolation, because of what we've been saying. There's someone who comes into your house who hasn't been tested. You don't know, he might be asymptomatic and still has the virus. There's a lot of things. So because you've broken the rules, a bit like Heiko Harlich, the Augsburg manager, when he went to buy his toothpaste, that was clearly breaking the lockdown rules and the self-isolation that he was on the week before the first game of the Bundesliga for his team. So he had to step out and go in self-isolation and had to be tested again. It would be the same for Aurier. He will be tested as well, again, a bit like with Callum Hudson-Odoi did. And then we will see the result. I think there will be a fine from Spurs, who have put the case under investigation right now. I believe he hadn't been fined for the first two incidents, if you want. Maybe this one is a bit different. We saw Kyle Walker being fined. We saw Jack Grealish being fined. So there's no reason why Serge Aurier will not be fined, I think, by Spurs. But it's again, I know what the boys have been saying about role model, etc. But again, it's a football player. Again, it's another footballer. Like all the names that we mentioned before in the last 2 months who've all broken the rules of lockdown. And in other sports, it doesn't happen.
Meanwhile, Shaka, players continue to speak out. Some of them don't feel safe. The latest, Danny Rose, has compared players to lab rats in this new COVID era. We've heard from all the other guys about how they would feel about returning to play. I don't think we've heard from you on this show yet. Would you have any reservations returning to football right now?
I would, but I'd have to be walked through the steps that the league is taking in ensuring my own safety. I understand exactly what Danny Rose is saying or trying to say. I certainly understand his apprehension and his concern, even if some of his explanations are maybe a little over the top in that regard. We could probably say in the Bundesliga, those players are more being treated like lab rats than anywhere else, seeing that they're the first back out, Italy following and Spain following suit, and it seems the Premier League almost fourth in queue. But what has to be done here is, I think the league has to bring doctors and people who can speak to the science around this virus and explain it to the players in terms that they would understand. What's being done, why it's being done, and how they're trying to minimize or mitigate the challenges around the spread of this virus. Troy Deeney, you saw him speak about his issues and his challenges with his young son. Those are some of the things I think that are most concerning for players. It's one thing to be mid-20s and healthy, but we all know that you can be asymptomatic in carrying the virus. What happens if you interact with the rest of your family or your parents who may be a little bit older? These are things that players have to be comfortable and confident about before they take the pitch.
All right, thank you, Shaka. Reminder then to join us for tomorrow's show. Dan Thomas is back. He'll be joined by Jan Arge Fjortoft. The boys looking ahead to the weekend that will be in the Bundesliga.
We're at the 3-0 Arena, which, of course, is absolutely empty, bar for 322 people, the players, the substitutes, various officials and delegates of the two teams. The supporters will have to watch from home from now until further notice. Yes, I can hear you. Yes, I can hear you.
There he is, Ian Dark, back to work as the Bundesliga returns, calling Hoffenheim Hertha Berlin from the comforts of home. Ian, what was that like?
It was very strange and not a little bit scary. I put it roughly like trying to climb Mount Everest in plimsolls. It felt like that. I mean, Craig will know, we've all commentated, you too, Seb, off television pictures. Sometimes we have to do that in the industry, but never from home before. So I had enough wires and electrical equipment, I think, to launch a rocket. Brought round to my house. It was all lashed together. But the one thing is, at the end of it, you're still dependent on being able to identify the players off a television picture, and not particularly good television picture, because it comes through your broadband at home. And sometimes, just sometimes in the second half, the picture actually froze. So I had a shot of Robert Skov taking a corner for Hoffenheim. And then for 20 seconds, absolutely nothing. Just him, frozen picture. Next thing I saw was the goalkeeper with the ball in his hand. So you'll understand it was quite weird with that strange sound of silence behind it the whole way. I'd have to say it was among the more difficult games I've ever had to do.
Ian, you are quickly becoming the king of viral videos during this pandemic. Are you surprised at how popular this video has gotten?
Well, I'm not sure about all of that. Yeah, I am a bit surprised, really. But I think people are pretty bored at the moment with nothing to do. So I just thought I'd put it out there on Twitter to give people a little sense of the kind of problems we were facing and maybe a little bit of an insight too as sort of big-time football returns. So, yeah, I was surprised. And I did have a kind of a method in my madness because I was trying to show people that if it wasn't up to the usual standard, this was why, and this is how we were having to do it.
Speaking of not up to the usual standard, you're having to work from home. I'm sure that's some challenges. You find any horror stories between you or your colleagues of what it's like to try and call a match from your living room?
Well, I had the picture freezing, as I told you about, but the interesting one was Paul Dempsey, who Craig will know, who normally does the Bundesliga. So he's doing the Dortmund-Schalke derby game, sitting at home in his office. There's a guy banging on the door trying to make deliveries from the supermarket and not understanding why Paul isn't coming to answer the door. He didn't know or even care, I think, that Erling Haaland was about to score a goal again for Dortmund. But it's a farcical scene and probably the basis for a very good comedy sketch.
Ian, there's been a lot of talk about the lack of crowd noise. As someone who has called games in the United States, and I can say this too, working with an empty stadium is not something that I'm unaccustomed to. But for you, do you feel you need crowd noise to make a good football broadcast?
If you'd asked me before doing that game, should there be artificial sound effects put on the backing track, so to speak, I'd have said definitely not. It's too artificial. Having seen it all weekend, the other games I wasn't commentating on, I just watched on television on the Bundesliga. Yeah, it feels all the time like it's a reserve game. You can hear the players shouting. There's no crowd, and it just feels like a reserve match. So I'd like to see it tried. I think in Germany, they do give you the option on the host broadcaster there. You can turn to a channel with crowd effects in the background. Of course, it has to be done in a sophisticated way, I think, to work. But I'd like to try it. I think it might make a difference, yeah.
Craig, what do you think? Pumped in crowd noise?
Just one quick story. And these guys did a great job, by the way, the commentators, all these guys who adapted and worked from home and the technical people. It's even for an old pro like Mr. Dark, I mean, it's not easy. It's not as easy as people would think. But I'm not going to give names, but I know of a commentator once in England who had to work from home because he had no other option on this particular occasion. And he was doing a match, but unfortunately, his bloody dog wouldn't stop barking in the background. And he actually had to say, because he couldn't get out of his chair and go and usher the dog, he had to say, "Oh, it seems like we've got some police dogs on the side of the field at the moment." So he was like, it's one of those things you just never know. You just never know what's going to happen. To go back to the crowd noise things, when we sit in gantries doing commentaries, if Ian and I all sat in the Premier League and we're at a game and we're at a ground and we're doing a game, we've got our earphones in, we're hearing the director, we're hearing all sorts of different things. But one of the most important things for a commentator and a co-commentator is having the effects of the crowd at a good level in your ears, because it's very difficult to do the commentary without that effects of the crowd in your ears. And it's kind of the same when you're watching the game. You're kind of, it's missing that little bit. And if it takes them trying that for a little bit just to take the edge off it, then I'm all for it, because it's eerie watching a game between two excellent sides with no crowd there and no crowd noise. And if they can try something, why not?
Ian, real quick, change gears. We were talking earlier about Serge Aurier. There are players at Watford who are refusing to turn up to training after some of their teammates have tested positive. As far as Project Restart goes, how worried are you?
Not particularly worried, because the number of positive tests was under 1% of the 700-odd that they did. I think it is still on course. I mean, I'll be very interested to hear, and I think everybody in England will be interested to hear, when the stat comes out, what were there, 250 players playing in the Bundesliga against each other with full contact at the weekend, how many positive tests are there going to be after those games? Because I think that's going to be a pretty significant stat when we get it. Now, I think it's still on course, but I think it's probably, we're talking June the 19th as the possible starting date. I don't think anything's happened yet to knock that off course, so there are hoops still to be jumped through.
All right, gentlemen, I'm out of questions. There are more questions, however, for both of you in today's edition of Extra Time. Take to Twitter, hashtag FC Extra Time. Get us your questions, and the boys will answer them after the show.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride, from the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Article right now on our website from Jeff Carlisle with all the details on Major League Soccer's so-called Orlando plan, a World Cup-style tournament that could begin as early as late June, early July. Of course, we have to know what the players think. A couple of them stopped by Banter with Taylor Twellman earlier this week. We'll hear first from Ale Bedoya.
Am I going to be real candid here or what? Like,
absolutely.
From my perspective, look, I'll start off with saying every one of us, I think, would agree that we want to get back to playing. Like, I want to get back out there being competitive, you know, games. The staff also wants to be out there, you know, fans want to be watching games. But I will say that, you know, this all feels a little bit rushed. I think we all need to be partners in this, not just that, you know, ESPN and Disney, which owns ESPN, is just partnering with MLS to get, you know, to help the owners out and show games and get this done. I think the players take, you know, we're taking all the risk again, you know, by going down there, being isolated. You know, I think it's a strong term to say it's like being in a luxurious prison.
To be thinking that the only way your season is going to start is by spending maybe 70 days in isolation, a long way away from what you would call home. It's, as a concept, that's even harder than everything that's just come to this point. The past 2 months, you've been at home and people have still struggled. So to suggest that the best option could be to take all these players without their families, without their friends, without the things which are really comforts to them, and put them in a place for the purpose of entertainment for, I don't know, or maybe not even the entertainment side of it, maybe just the financial side of it. It seems very, very short-sighted.
All right, Taylor, making some waves on the latest edition of Banter. Look, there seems to be some pretty serious resistance here from the players as far as this World Cup-style tournament plan goes. Were you surprised from what you heard on your show?
First off, good to see you, Sebi. It's been a while, and you look healthy and love the hairstyle. I'm not really surprised, to be honest with you, Sebi, because here's why. There's over 650 players in Major League Soccer. Is everyone going to agree with this? Absolutely not. What stood out to me is the mixed messaging. You heard Nedu Manuwa right there say about 70 days, and yet from my understanding, we're looking at the tournament starting early July, July 3rd, July 4th, and then if you go all the way to the final, it's August 6th, but obviously you're not going to go, everyone's not going to go to the final. Now, there's a discrepancy whether or not the quarantine means you go 2.5-3 weeks to Orlando to train. Obviously, that's going to be determined by the state and health departments, which is above your and our pay grade. So I'm not really surprised that there's a little disruption within the players. I understand it to a certain extent, because if you've gone through 8 weeks of quarantine already, and now you're going to be asked to go 70 days like Nadim's saying. But, Sebi, they're not going to be asked to go 70 days from everything I've asked behind the scenes from Major League Soccer officials and even from some other players. So I think the messaging needs to be cleared up among the players, but you have to respect it. This is a global pandemic. Not everyone's going to be on the same page. And if some players that have families and some players that have pregnant spouses, which I'm hearing there's a good number of those, you have to respect those people and those decisions, but that also doesn't mean those people speak for the collective group either.
Taylor, it seems like a lot of the guys, and you can totally understand this, just don't want to be away from their families in this time. Mm-hmm. Major League Soccer could look at other leagues. You see the Bundesliga, they're playing in home and away stadiums. Even in the United States, Major League Baseball, not official, but working towards a plan where they would be playing home and away games. It wouldn't be kind of one centralized location. You think a plan like that would be easier for the players to swallow?
Yes, I think even you could be, the players would be even a little bit more reasonable, Sebi, and look at it and say, why don't we do four bubble cities in their own regions and go there for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time, play games every 4 days and get through that. I just think when you hear Alejandro Bedoya say partner up, that's what the players are talking about. They don't want to feel like they're being dictated to with this. And I'm not totally sure there is, but there is a little bit rush factor here because Major League Soccer looks at the window of opportunity. The longer it takes the NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball to get to a point to return to play, if Major League Soccer can get all their ducks in a row and also allow the players and staffs to train properly and get them fit, then there's an opportunity, Sebi, to be the only league in the United States that comes back. I understand that, but to your point, over the last 48 hours, New York, California, Texas, their governors have all come out and said you can play sports without fans. I think that's pushing the meter a little bit for the players saying, well, hold on a minute. If we give it a little bit more time, is that going to allow us to play 24, 26 regular season games, closed door studio games within our own stadiums? I think that possibility becomes more of a reality the longer they wait. I'm just not sure they want to wait and then look at August 1st start when you could look at that month of July and kick things off where you're the only league in the United States in the spotlight.
Taylor, I want to focus on something that Minnesota United's Ethan Finley said. Yes, he's a midfielder, but more importantly, maybe here, he is a union rep. And he was talking about players' priorities for returning to play. Obviously, his first priority is health. That's not a surprise. His second priority, though, whatever competition they come back to, he wants it to be worthwhile. And use that specific word, worthwhile, twice. If it's a tournament, if whatever it is, how does MLS make whatever they're going to bring back worthwhile to these guys? Is it CONCACAF Champions League berth? Is it MLS Cup? Is it Supporter Shield? Is it straight cash, homie? I mean, is it money that's going to make the difference? Like, how do they make it worthwhile? What do these players want?
Sebi, it's a good point. I mean, I'd argue it's all of the above, right? Listen, you're not going to go all the way to Orlando, play at the minimum 5 games and have those games not matter. So at the minimum, those games have to count towards your regular season standings. Now, the question I have is if you advance out of your group in this said tournament, do those games count towards the regular season, and then you play less games after that? That's where the clarity needs to be had for me. First and foremost, CONCACAF Champions League spot goes to the winner. Absolutely, 100%. Because obviously the other competitions within the United States right now, those are postponed or canceled, whether that's the Open Cup. And the supporter shield in the regular season standings is now got a little bit of an asterisk next to it. So why not move one of those CONCACAF Champions League spots and put it there? And quite honestly, Sebi, what if you said as a league, and I know this isn't going to happen, but I'm going to throw it out there. What if you said the winning team doesn't take a pay cut? Like, at some point, you do need to make it worthwhile for Ethan Finley and these players. And I understand what they're talking about. At the minimum, the games will go to regular season. We know that. But if you advance, what do those games mean? We have no idea. And if you don't advance, what do you do for the next 2.5-3 weeks? There's been too much time off, Sebi. This is the problem I have. 6 months, these players have been off over the last 8.5. And while we look at the Bundesliga and Serie A, La Liga, and even the EPL, those guys are at the end of the year. That's the difference. Now you've got to get these guys into fitness again. They've had too long of a break. That's what Ethan Finley and the players mean by worthwhile. And there's got to be a monetary value to it. I'm sorry, there just does, as long as those games still matter towards the regular season.
Yeah, we should also acknowledge there's a very public negotiation going on right now between MLS owners and the players about a potential salary cut. Hey, Taylor, one more bit of news. We got word yesterday that basically all the Major League Soccer and Liga MX business deals for the next year have been canceled. That includes what would have been the MLS Liga MX All-Star Game. When we come back, whenever Major League Soccer comes back, do you think in 2021 MLS still needs an All-Star Game? And I say that thinking back to 2018 when Zlatan Ibrahimovic basically said thanks but no thanks to a mid-season exhibition.
I want this All-Star Game, Sebi. You and I have spent numerous amount of hours together. I firmly believe in this kind of All-Star Game because there will be, and I don't care who tries to convince me otherwise, a competitive edge to Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. And obviously it's an All-Star Game and you're going to have the best of the best, but there's still going to be something to that game, especially the 4, 5, 6 years that they initially do this. Now, it may become a novelty later on, but those first 3 or 4 games, U.S. versus Mexico, MLS versus Liga MX, I think if you're going to do an All-Star Game, then absolutely. Sebi, I don't know if you need an All-Star Game when you get down the road at World Cup 2026, and if there's any merging of these two leagues, I'm not sure you may need that anymore because you've got too many games, and you've also got times where you're not going to have enough time to play an All-Star Game. But you also got to understand, in the 25th year of Major League Soccer, it's still fulfilling a huge part of that sponsorship responsibility. I just think MLS versus Liga MX is going to be, whenever it's done, the best All-Star Game we've ever seen, and especially if that first one's kicked off in Los Angeles.
Taylor, great stuff as always. Thanks for the time. If you want more Taylor, you can check him out on this week's edition of Banter with Taylor Twellman. Among his many guests, U.S. men's national teamer and Schalke midfielder Weston McKennie. Make sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. The boys are joined again by Jan Arga Fjortoff. Talk about the first weekend back for the Bundesliga and a potential timetable for a return of German fans. Very interesting stuff. Jules rejoins us now. Jules, let's work our way through the latest transfer reports. This one from Marca suggesting that Erling Haaland could be ending up at PSG. What are you making of it?
Well, what I can tell you is that right now there is absolutely nothing between PSG and Erling Haaland or his dad, who is his advisor, or even Mino Raiola, who is his agent. Maybe down the line in a few years' time, if, and that's a big if, Kylian Mbappe ends up leaving Paris, Neymar ends up leaving Paris, Mauro Icardi, who is looking like he would stay at the club, is leaving Paris as well, and they need a striker. I'm sure that Haaland would be back on the shortlist, especially if he continues his development the way he's been doing so far. But right now, there's just nothing into this at all, and I think PSG are just looking forward to doing the transfer that they have to do this summer, which is 2 fullbacks and a midfielder, and that would be pretty much it.
Jules, let me pull back the curtain here a little bit. Usually for these segments, we'll throw a bunch of transfer rumors at you. You say they're all junk, which is fair, but this one you wanted to talk about. Explain to me why. Edinson Cavani to Inter Milan.
Yes, because this one is gathering pace. Clearly, Inter Milan's first choice was Dries Mertens. We know that, and the Belgian international has decided to stay at Napoli. He will sign very soon, in the next few hours, an extension on his deal that was coming to an end this summer. So Inter have to look at other options, and clearly Antonio Conte, I was going to say that he likes all the players. It's not all the players, although Cavani and Dries Mertens are over the age of 30. But I think for Antonio Conte, the idea of having someone who knows Serie A already, which both Mertens and now Cavani clearly do, with experience to go with the younger players in the squad is very important. Players as well who would give their best, who have that kind of team spirit that Conte likes, and etc. And Cavani ticks all the boxes, really. It's just another option on the Cavani's table, him and his brother, who is his agent. I believe they will have the choice whenever they make a decision. Atletico Madrid are still very interested, and they were already there. He almost joined them in January. Inter Milan, of course, he will have offer from MLS. There's no doubt, for Boca Juniors as well, and South American clubs. There's no doubt as well. Maybe other clubs in Italy as well, probably. Even maybe Paris will try to keep him for another year or two if they decide not to keep Mauro Icardi. So he will have a lot of options. But Inter Milan, and you would think that that's one as well that can very much interest him too. I think there will be a lot of discussion between the two parts.
Jules, real quick, let's switch gears a little bit. All across Europe, leagues are trying to figure out a way to get back into action. Meanwhile, French football seems to be devolving into a series of lawsuits. Last week, we talked about maybe the regret that people in France might feel watching the Bundesliga return. Has that regret turned into some genuine feelings that a mistake has been made?
Yes, I think for sure you're right. And we talked about the frustration. I think it was on Sunday night show. From a lot of people now, more and more people, frustration gathering as well for maybe taking that decision too quickly. Maybe it was the right decision, but maybe they could have waited a bit longer and then assess the situation and decide what to do then, maybe 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later. Now that we see what's happening in Germany and the steps that are being made in Italy, in Spain and in England as well, there's no reason why France could not have done the same. I don't believe that. A second, maybe back then it was not safe enough to decide to go again and play. But right now, there's no way that France could not do the same. And I think there's still people trying. Jean-Michel Aulas at Lyon, for example, and others as well. We've learned today that there's a big dispute between Ligue 1 clubs and Ligue 2 clubs about the TV revenues. Ligue 2, by the way, next season we'll have 22 teams instead of 22 because they've voted against relegation. So there's a bit of a mess. And you would think that maybe it would have been far much easier to wait and maybe decide to resume playing at some point.
Jules, great stuff. A reminder, you should bookmark the Transfer Talk page on our website right now. All the latest news, notes, and reports as they become true at ESPNFC.com. Another friendly reminder to check over on YouTube for our ESPNFC channel. Plenty of great content there. Really just Alain Herc yelling at me, as you can see. Every once in a while, though, we are also joined by Julie Foudy, where we discuss the latest in women's soccer. She joins us now on the show to do the same. Julie, some exciting news. Steve Goff of the Washington Post reporting that the NWSL is looking at a midsummer tournament. Not that different, it sounds like, than the MLS plan. Could start as early as late June. Mm-hmm. All nine teams would be involved. When you first heard this idea, what was your reaction?
Great. Let's play. We all want professional sports back, of course. 9 teams in Salt Lake City, rosters of 22, lots of testing. So, I mean, on paper, it sounds good. I mean, putting it together is a whole different animal as we're seeing. I talked to someone from the NWSL today, and they said that it's a bear. The protocols, there's 15 doctors they're talking to. They're trying to get, of course, as they should, all of these protocols in place for testing, for tracking, for tracing, for if there is a positive test, what do you do with it? How do you assure that the players are safe, the staff is safe? But in the end, I think there's a lot of want and desire from the fan base to see soccer again, of course. There's probably some pressure, I'm sure, from the sponsorship and broadcast rights side to play some games. And the NWSL feels with a small league with 9 teams versus, say, a 26-team league in MLS, that they're able to pull something off like this.
It's a unique opportunity, Julie, isn't it, for the NWSL? If they get this announcement out in the next couple days, they'd be the first U.S. pro sports league to announce a comeback date. When we look at where women's soccer fits into the discussion of sports in the United States, how important would it be, do you think, for the NWSL to be leading the way?
I think it'd be great to get a jump on that. We've seen from the Bundesliga how important that is. And, you know, everyone's following that and watching that. And it's the only content out there outside of a few golf events and NASCAR. But I also think it comes with great responsibility and that you got to get it right. And you got to get it right for the players. And, you know, right now, having talked to a player on the national team, there is some hesitation that, is there enough time in preseason to get fit so that they're not risking injury? Are the protocols all in place? And so you kind of have, you have a real enthusiasm, of course, for the players to want to play for their fans and want to play for the sponsors and keep the league afloat. But you also have, as it seems very natural as well and understandable, that hesitation of, but is this the right time? And are we doing this right? And so I think there's various camps that you're finding players fall into on the national team of, yeah, I'm all in. Two, I'm a little hesitant. I need to see more. I need the process to play out a little more. And then I'm sure you're going to have a few national teamers who are, I'm not comfortable with this. And how that looks for the league is, and how they handle the messaging on that is going to be important as well. But I think everyone would agree we want to get out there and they want to be playing again. It's whether they can do it in a safe, responsible manner.
Julie, you mentioned the women's national team players. Steve Goff reported something similar to what you're saying, that there were some women's national team players who were not completely bought in on this idea. All 23 of the World Cup champions play in the NWSL. That is not a small or minor detail. Just how much say will these U.S. players have ultimately in this decision, you think?
Well, I think it's going to be an individual decision. I asked that question. Is this like either everyone's all in or they're not in? And the response and answer I got was no, it's very individual and it's very varied. I will say the NWSL was quick to point out that they've been working with the Players Association, the league's Players Association, the NWSL Players Association, that they have been talking to them on a consistent basis. They understand the hesitancy by some people. They're going to do testing before every game. They're going to, you know, of course, make sure that they're in a safe environment in terms of where they're staying, who's coming into contact with them. So they have all those protocols that they're building out. I just think that it's hard for a player right now, with it starting into June, without having all the information in front of them to be able to, and that's what some of them are saying, to make a decision right now. And so how that frames up is going to be interesting. Do they have to have a complete roster of 22 right now to announce to go forward? Or can they delay what that roster is going to look like as people get more comfortable with the protocols and what's put in place? I think it's going to be something that's a moving target and flexible, and they have to be to ensure that players are comfortable coming in for an end of June start.
Julie, thanks for the insight. Thanks for the time. I know you're busy. Laughter Permitted podcast is available. One of the latest episodes featuring Allie Krieger and Ashlyn Harris. Make sure to download it over on the website.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
With thousands of locally owned Napa stores across the nation, chances are that wherever you call home, we do too. So as America starts opening back up for business, and as more of us start getting back out there again, we'll be in big cities, small towns, and everywhere in between, doing what we've always done to help keep our local communities moving forward. So whether you stop by a Napa Auto Parts store, Auto Care Center, or visit us at Napa Online, you can count on Napa know-how.
After the Bundesliga returned to action last weekend, here's a look at what the table gives us. Bayern Munich still 4 points clear over second place Borussia Dortmund. Mönchengladbach 6 points back of the league leaders. Leipzig in the fourth and final Champions League spot, just 1 point ahead of Bayer Leverkusen, who are in fifth. The upcoming weekend schedule, very interesting. Starts Friday with the Berlin Derby, Hertha hosting Union Berlin, then some huge matches on Saturday. Leverkusen travels to Gladbach. That's fifth versus third place. You've got Dortmund traveling to Wolfsburg as Dortmund try to keep track with Bayern Munich, and Bayern Munich are hosting Eintracht Frankfurt. All those games Saturday. We got to wait for Sunday to get a look at Leipzig. They are 7 points behind Bayern Munich, and Leipzig are away to Mainz. Big news for Bayern Munich. Speaking of, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge with the following announcement, the Bayern Munich CEO. Quote, Manuel Neuer is the best keeper in the world. He is our captain. FC Bayern Munich are very happy and delighted that Manuel has prolonged his contract through June 30th, 2023. This, of course, after months of tense negotiations, Bayern having brought in or signed Alexander Nubel. But it looks like Manuel Neuer will be staying with Bayern Munich for the foreseeable future. Speaking of Manuel Neuer, well, almost, this is Meow-Nuel Neuer, okay? This is the newest viral sensation. We're getting tons of these during, and look at this. I mean, look at the saves that this cat is making. I mean, you know, forget about Alexander Nubel. He's got no chance to take Manuel Neuer's or Meow-Nuel Neuer's job. This video's got to have something over like a million views already on the social networks. Make sure to check it out. All right, then, that's all the time we've got for today's edition of ESPN FC. Thanks to all involved, Shaka Hislop, Julian Laurent, Taylor Twellman, Julie Foudy as well. Stick around right now. It's Extra Time with Craig Burley and Ian Dark. Hey there, everybody. Welcome into this Wednesday edition of ESPN FC Extra Time. We've got your questions straight off of Twitter. We got Craig Burley straight off the golf course, and we have Ian Dark joining us from his very technologically impressive home studio, where he's just already before, calling matches. Hey, look at that.
Just before we get onto the questions, what reaches me via the old pigeon carrier that you decided to do a top five US players' performances in the Bundesliga at the weekend, and you put in a player at number two that didn't even play. Gio Reyna, how's that possible?
Okay, let me make my case. First of all, you can check out the video on the ESPNFC YouTube channel. Definitely go over there and give it a little click and a little
top
like.
Top performances. I mean, how can you have a top performance when you get injured in the warm-up and you don't play? How's that possible?
Well, sometimes other guys have worse performances, right? And so they might drop in that order. And here's the real reason. He beat out, Sancho's a little bit injured, but Thorgan Hazard for the start. So he beat out two pretty good players who were supposed to be in the starting lineup, gets hurt. I didn't hold him against him. I also wanted, you know, give the guys something to argue about, so it helped.
Please,
speaking of things
God's
to argue sake. About, let's get to these. let's get to the questions here. Dan the Orange Man on Twitter asked, Ian, what is the greatest performance that you've seen from a single player while commentating a match?
That's hard off the top of your head. I'd need a bit of time to think about that, but I think I'm going to go back to that 2011 Champions League final and Lionel Messi when Barcelona were just magnificent on the day, and he was too. So, yeah, I'll pick that.
All right, Craig, next question for you from Paul. Who was the biggest prankster you played with, and what was the best prank?
Probably John Spencer was the one that was always trying to do the most at Chelsea. And I can't tell you what some of the pranks were, because they were so near the mark that unfortunately I can't share those particular ones. I used to do the odd one myself, like Vidar Riset, the Norwegian international, when I was at Celtic with him. At one point we were living in the same apartment block, and that apartment block had a communal swimming pool and gymnasium, and so I was coming out one night as Vidar was going in, and he decided that he was going to go into the sauna, and so I nailed his shoes to the floor and tied his laces in about 150 knots. And he managed to get the nails out, but he couldn't get the knot out. And I saw him outside my window, bouncing back to his house. with the two shoes, with the laces both tied together. And he tried. You know what he did the next day? You know what he did the next day? He took an old milk crate, if you know what bread crate. He took a crate that holds all the bread. He tied it to the exhaust of my car, and he slid it underneath the car. And he anticipated I was going to take this car and drive it all the way to Celtic Park with this bread tray hanging out the back. But I decided to take my wife's car that day. And as I reversed out, I spotted it. And so when I came to work at Celtic, he had this big grin on his face. And I was able to let him down gently by telling him that I took my wife's car and I'd spotted it. So, you know, you got to be sharp to do these pranks, you know.
Just another reason for Ms. Burley to regret marrying you there. Okay, Frank McManaman gives us the next tweet. Ian, what are the biggest changes that you have seen in the Premier League since you began commentating in 1992? Is that accurate? Was 92 your first year? No.
The Premier League started in 1992. Yeah, a long time
started
ago.
92.
Now, I think the standard of the pitches is one thing. The surfaces, Craig will remember this. They weren't always like they are today. They're like billiard tables, you know, pool tables today. Wonderful to play on. And the other thing is, I think in the first Premier League, there were only 12 foreign players. The rest of them were British. Now, of course, we have a galaxy of stars from all over the world playing in the Premier League. So it is very different now.
Frank McManaman gives us our next question as well. Craig, who is the most annoying player, not co-commentator, that you ever played with?
Oh, the most annoying player that I ever played with?
Yep. You could give us an against. I'm sure there's a longer list there.
I think I would, and I've brought this up a few times, I think Georgie Kinkladze annoyed me at Derby, because Georgie Kinkladze was a supreme talent, the Georgian international. And we only ever saw glimpses of that. He had the world at his feet. And I saw, and I played and trained with players like Gianfranco Zola and Henrik Larsson and Ruud Gullit, and the list goes on. And his talent, in terms of talent, he could match them, but in terms of work rate and attitude, he couldn't. And that's why he had a good career, but he could have been a world beater. He had all the skill. And so from that sense, that kind of annoyed me, because he was a guy that, you know, I would call it a waster, because he just didn't get the most out of his talent. And I tell you what, he was a heck of a talent.
Ian, penultimate question coming your way. Who's the greatest Spaniard to play in the Premier League? Xavi Alonso, David Silva, Torres, De Gea, Fabregas, or other? Plenty of choices.
I'm going to go, it's a sentimental choice really, for David Silva, who's been around at Manchester City right the way through the glory years really. What is it, 10 years or so now? It's his final season. They should be building a statue. He's a lovely, magical player, and really, he's been at the heart of so much success at that club. And he's such a humble guy as well. He's much loved, I think, not only by Manchester City fans, but right around the league, and we'll be sorry to see him go.
Craig, any issues with Ian's choice?
No, because, you know, some of the other guys maybe grab the headlines a bit more, but do you know, in the old days when they used to give players the markings in the newspapers, well, they might still do, I don't know. But, you know, you could mark David Silva before each weekend started, because he was almost, if he wasn't a 10 out of 10, he was an 8 out of 10 every week. And I think that consistency over a decade of service or whatever it is for Man City has been just incredible. And as Ian said, no ego, unflappable, don't really read about him, and he just gets on with his job. And he's been, as I say, an 8 out of 10 or above almost every weekend for 10 years, which is quite incredible.
All right, boys, the last question touches on a recurring topic here on ESPN FC Extra Time just recently. Again, from Dan the Orange Man. Seb, has quarantine hindered your preparation for the boxing match against Dan? Ian, I think you were on the last time we talked about this. Craig, why do people want to see me and Dan fight so much?
I think it's because the both of you are very annoying, and people just want to see you two knocking seven bells out of each other, basically.
I've suggested an ESPN FC quiz between the two of us, with you as the host, Craig. How do you feel about that?
I'm busy that day. No, that'd be, whenever it is.
That would be tame by comparison. I think I'd rather see the fight, really. I mean, I'd rather see this. I'd rather see Dan and Sebi, I think, fighting than this idea of Mike Tyson, you know, in getting on for 60 and Evander Holyfield getting it on again. But I don't know. They'd have to wear very big gloves, soft gloves, so they didn't hurt each other.
That's right. You know, this beautiful face is after all my moneymaker, so we got to keep it at least somewhat intact. We'll leave it there for today. A reminder, you can watch ESPN FC 7 days a week. We are back at it 365, 24/7. Don't miss a single show. We will be back tomorrow.